Hey, Jay Kerr, how are you?
I'm well, Flo. You?
I'm doing okay. I want everybody to know that Jay is my musical director, my director in every time I set foot on stage or open up my mouth to sing, there is Jay, and he's one of a kind, and he's the best in the business. So now that's it.
But well, that's very kind. Thanks.
Well, no, it's the truth. It's the truth. And I always love to tell the story of how we met. That was in the Ed Sullivan Building, right?
It was.
And I had an appointment there, and I was in between musical directors, and I saw you standing in front of your studio, and I saw a piano there. And Carmen, I says to him, do you play the piano? And Jay says to me, yes, I play the piano. And I said, I'm looking for somebody. And you sat down and played, and I said to myself, oh, my goodness, he is fantastic. And we've been together like 40 years. Can you imagine that, 40 years?
Long time. I can't imagine being alive that long.
Oh, my God, 40 years ago. But you've been a wonderful guide to me. But, Jay, when you were young guy, were you always interested in music? Were there other people in your family that were interested in music?
I had a brother who sang things. He played the piano and guitar. He taught me how to read music in a fast way that wasn't really reading music, but taught me how to play. So, at about the age of 8 or 9, I started being very musical.
Oh, that's good. I think music is so important, I think, in people's lives, even if they don't want to make a career out of it. But there's something about music. What did they say? Music soothes the savage beast. Did I get that right, or did I garble that all up?
Someone once said that, yes.
Yes, but they probably said it correctly. So then you've worked with some interesting people, and you've done some interesting things, and you've written some wonderful music.
Well, thank you. Yes, well, you know, you do what comes along. You never have a plan; it just happens. Or if you have a plan, it doesn't matter because something else happens.
But that's what you. Hey, you just told the story of my life. My God. Every time I want to plan something, or did you ever plan a conversation that you wanted to have with somebody, and then you're with that person, and then they take it in a whole other different direction, and I say, well, that's not what I planned to say, you know. But it's,
well, that's the business you're in right now, Flo, so
that's
who knows
true.
What I'm going to say.
Absolutely, and I have to be careful what you're going to say. But it's very, but you've done so many, many things now. When you were in the city, I forget, your studio, was it on 7th Avenue then eventually? Where was it?
Well, after I was in the Sullivan Building. I was in the Sullivan Building very content with where I was. I had a great, great Western light, and everybody I knew who had dead plants would bring their plants to me, and the wonderful light would bring all their plants back to life. So,
So
I was kind of like a plant doctor. But one day somebody knocked on my door and said, I'm here to measure your office. And I said, why do you want to measure my office? He said, well, because CBS has bought the building and we're going to use your office. That led to CBS, to whom I protested. They found me a space on 7th Avenue. So my last office building while I was a coach in Manhattan was on 7th Avenue, yes.
Next to
the Carnegie Deli, the famous Carnegie Deli.
Right, famous Carnegie Deli. And and the Stage Deli was around there someplace, too, yeah. But we had a lot of good times there and whatnot. And we were involved in a lot of music, too, that Gladys Shelley wrote.
Yes, as a matter of fact, our first rehearsal with our band of three, our little orchestra, was in that new space that I'd just gotten on 7th Avenue, that CBS got for me on 7th Avenue. They were measuring it, but I didn't finish that story. They were measuring it for Letterman's offices. Letterman was coming from NBC to CBS,
right,
and they were using the theater in the Ed Sullivan Building. And so Yeah, so that's where I was, and that's where I left.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of interesting, talking about, a lot of people don't realize who Gladys Shelley was. She wrote a ton of music, and she and her husband owned Palisades Park. So that was one thing she never had. And every time we would do something, we needed money. Gladys was always there to give us the money to pay for things.
Every time we needed money, every time we needed money for that show.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Yes. Oh, I'm glad you clarified that. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so we did a show based on her music at Don't Tell Mama.
Yes, we did.
Right. Yeah. I did a couple of shows at Don't Tell Mama with you, and it was really... A lot of people don't remember that Don't Tell Mama originally was called Mildred Pierce. And it was a restaurant based on Joan Crawford. And when you went in, the whole place was covered with pictures of Joan Crawford. And it was, and then the other people took over and it became, Don't Tell Mama. But there were so many interesting clubs.
It's still going. I'm not sure when it started, but it's at least 40 years.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. And a lot of the clubs, too, that I played and you were with me and stuff like that, I don't think they're around anymore. You know, we go way back.
No, I would say that's a very long last. I don't want to say it's the longest lasting cabaret, but it sure probably is.
Yeah, but now I did a show up at your theater up in Salem called Senior Moments, and that was a great, great idea. How did you manage to put that show together, and how did you come across that show?
Well, I didn't come across it. We created it. I at that time, I had written about three original shows for Fort Salem Theater with a writer named Al Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was time for us to conceive our new show. It was New Year's. It was after New Year's. So it was January or February of the year that the show had to be done. And we really didn't know what we were going to do. He'd had some ideas and I didn't like them. And then my wife Lynn and I went on vacation to Costa Rica. And while we were there, we were sitting on a terrace overlooking the pool, you know, and in these all-inclusive resorts, they have swimming pools that you can swim up to the bar. So there's a bar at the pool. And there were about six people senior to me. I think I was about 60 at the time. And, they were comparing their surgery scars and all their adventures as old survivors mm-hmm. who seemed to drink a lot. And I returned to Salem, where we were living, and said to Al, "We have the premise for the show. It's a bunch of seniors competing with one another, talking with one another, sharing with one another, and that's what Senior Moments became."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was really, it was a fun show. I had a good time.
Well, you had basically retired at that point. You were 82 at the time.
That's right. And I said, I'll probably never do another thing. And then, good heavens, you got me back on my feet and said, come on, Flo, do it.
Right. I say 82. I guess I didn't identify the year. Do people know how old you are, Flo?
Yes. People know that this coming April, I'm going to be 97. I don't hide it. I'm proud of the fact I can still put one foot in front of the other.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is your charming wife near you, too? Is she there?
She's off on an excursion. She's not. Yeah. But
okay.
She sends her love to you.
Oh, thank you very much. And you and I wrote a song together that she recorded, which was, remember, It Only Takes a Moment, about an older woman falling in love with a younger man. And she did a beautiful job, you know, with that. And it was, really terrific. But it's, when you were running the Salem Playhouse, how did you, I know having, run a theater company myself, How did you go for their vocal quality, vocal singing first and then acting, or acting then singing?
How did we cast people? If I were to be flipped and totally honest, first we cast based upon their availability. Is this person available?
Well, that makes sense. Yes.
Available for a show. Certainly there's the world of community theater, and I have some very accomplished friends who work in community theater, and they continue to audition because community theaters require auditioning, even though they're the most political organizations on the face of the planet, even more political than Washington. And so since we've agreed we're not going to talk about Washington, we won't talk about the politics and community theater.
Right. Absolutely.
However, the in the professional world, so you are required by the union to have auditions if you're doing an equity production.
Oh,
in
sure.
Manhattan.
Yes.
A Broadway production. They've got to have auditions. And some productions are not precast, but many of them are precast. Mm-hmm. But let's say it's not precast and you come upon a performer and that performer is a wonderful performer. They knock your socks off. You look at their resume and you find people whom they've worked with, who you have worked with, and you call and you find out, are these people, you know, is this too good to be true? Which often a very talented person is too good to be true. You find out if they're easy to work with, because this has always been the phenomenon. There are some, and I'm not going to name names because none will come to my aged mind. But speaking of my aged mind, I've totally lost my train of thought. You ask if these people will be difficult to work with, and if they are, you don't work with them. So my method of casting people is casting people, A, that I've worked with, whom I have a good relationship with, who will deliver a performance. It's actually a gal who, I will deviate, Flo, and you'll have to bring me back, a gal who probably did more performances at Fort Salem Theater than anybody else, who directed and choreographed and acted with us, was one of the few people who could yell at me and who I would tolerate. So I could tolerate people who would yell at me, and you know, she would just say, "Let me do it my way and let's see if it works." And we would do it that way. But you can work with some, and you can laugh at things, but some people are just so difficult, and some people are, you know, it becomes all about them, even when it's not about them, and it's difficult to work with them. So long answer to a short question, but I would generally cast people who I knew. So right. You asked me because you want the conversation to how do I evaluate a person for a voice, I want whatever they do to, if they do an audition or if they do a performance, to touch people. And that's not necessarily the tone of a voice, and that's not necessarily singing on tune. That's having the ability to have a feeling, which we want to have, which not all people have, to have a feeling and to transmit that feeling and to touch you in the audience, whether you're somebody who wrote the song, whether you're somebody who's never heard the song before, whatever. So that they can touch you. So that's what I measure, and just as long as I'm talking and you're not, I have a friend who I worked with, and I would always say something like that to her, and then she was attending an audition, it was probably 25 years ago, with Harold Prince. Is Harold Prince still alive?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I really don't know.
And you see, well, Harold Prince, a great director, a great producer, She was attending these auditions, and someone would come in and have an incredible voice, and he'd say thank you to them. And then someone would come in and sing a song and not have an incredible voice, and they would get callbacks. It's because they could touch. they somehow touched his emotions. He could see mm-hmm. that they could share some of themselves or some right. of a character, whatever, you know. I mean, if you're playing a character, that character has aspects of yourself, you know, mm-hmm. you're sharing yourself mm-hmm. anyhow. So I cast people not on the sound of their voice, but their ability to touch someone.
Well, I had an audition for the Paper Mill Playhouse, and they were auditioning to do a production of The Bells Are Ringing. This is after yep. it left, you know, Broadway. And they were going to do it there and then maybe have a revival of it on Broadway. So I was asked to audition for the Jean Stapleton role. People just imagine her as being, you know, with Archie Bunker, you know. But mm-hmm. she had a very nice voice, and she was the owner of the answering service that Judy Holliday, you know, worked for. And so I was auditioning for that part, and I walked in, and there's George Abbott, and I didn't realize he was going to be there. And I forget who was at the piano, and I gave them the music, and I sang, and I started to gather up the music, and George Abbott said, Mr. Abbott would like you to sing another song, which I did. And then he said, we want you to stay and read. And they enjoyed my reading, and they laughed and everything, but my agent said to me that they wanted somebody that had more credits than I did, and they said they wanted somebody that had a little bit more of a name. But just mm-hmm. the fact that George Abbott had asked me to sing another song and to read really was a thrill. I said, well, that's something for the book, you know?
So you see how times change, because if you say the name Flo Hale in Catskill and you say the name Jean Stapleton, more people will know who Flo Hale is than will know who Jean Stapleton is.
My wonderful engineer Carmen is shaking his head. Yes, yes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lord Almighty.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, I've been very fortunate up here because I've made such a wonderful group of friends. And the theater, the Bridge Street Theater that I volunteer for, has been a great place for me. It's like my second home. And, of course, you are there. You play for my shows there. God bless you. And you've also been in Carmen's musical South. And I think you're going to be working on some other stuff with Carmen at the theater, which is really great. So all of these things, it's like a circle. Everything is coming around. And the people are, more people are coming to the theater nowadays because, you know, television really isn't that great anymore, I don't think. I can't get excited about some of the TV shows. And people want to come in and they want to see live theater.
Well, I think it's like visiting somebody or doing a Zoom call. If you see somebody, if you talk to them, if you're in the same space as they are, it's something much different than seeing something on a screen.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
so,
sure.
So theater, there is an energy in a theater, even regardless of the quality of the performances, mm-hmm. the quality of the material,
right.
the quality of the production, there is something about that energy of Bridge Street, which seats, 80 people. So let's say you got 5 people on stage, you got 80 people in the audience. There are 85 different energies which are working, and it's a very special thing.
Oh, sure. It is. It is. There's nothing like... And I love it when when you were talking before about people being difficult. When I was a casting director, I was casting a commercial for Noxzema, and all the actresses that came in, everybody was wonderful, and I called everybody by their first names. And this one actress who happened to be in a TV show, and I think it was called Get Smart. Yes, it was Get Smart. So you'll know the actress I'm talking about. And I called her by her last name, Miss So-and-so. And she said, yes. And I said, did you get a chance to look at the storyboard? Well, yeah, I kind of looked at it. And so I got her in front of the camera, and I said, now, this is what they're looking for. She said, I looked at the storyboard. I told you that. And anyway, we did 3 takes, and they were terrible. So I thanked her very mm-hmm. much, and she left. So when the the client, the producer, the directors came in to look at the audition tape. I said to them, I said, there's one on here that is just so awful. I said, I had such difficulty directing her. And they said, who is, was it? And I mentioned the name. And the director says to me, oh, I'm so glad you said her audition is terrible. He said, I've worked with her before and she's so difficult. You know,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, no matter who the casting person is, no matter who, what the, listen to the people that are trying to help you. You know, none of us know everything.
So I'm curious. Are you not mentioning her name because you don't remember it? Or are you not mentioning her name because you're being polite?
I'm not mentioning her name because I'm being polite.
Okay, then I won't mention it.
But you know who I mean?
I do know who you mean.
Oh, yeah. No, yes. I won't mention her name because I want to be polite. But at the same time,
you just identified her, but you're not going to mention her name.
Right. Yeah. It's funny because about a year later, she was in an off-Broadway play and I went to see it with some friends and we were on the side there. And then she came out and was talking to people and she had no idea who I was. She didn't remember me at all. And we were talking and she was the sweetest pie and everything. That was because mm-hmm. I wasn't telling her what to do.
Yes, she was acting.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
There you go.
You know, so it's just really, it's amazing.
So I think you're telling this story, and I'm trying very hard not to say her name. You're telling this story because some people are not easy to work with, and some people's reputations follow them, and that's who you don't want to cast. Even if they're very, 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 very talented, because you are important too. Your life is important as a director, producer, whatever. You
mm-hmm,
have to
mm-hmm.
take care of yourself as well as taking care of your audience. And as I've learned, although it's always been painful to learn, no one is indispensable.
Boy, you can say that again.
Yeah. So.
Please
Except
say it
Carmen
again.
Carmen is indispensable because he's helping people hear us talk.
Hey.
But, you know, you talk about funny things with people and actress. There was a wonder, and I will mention her name because she was really a talented and a wonderful person to work with, to audition. Her name was Jerrianne Raphael, and she was one of the best women voiceover people. And she could imitate anybody, any woman. You just mm-hmm. give her. And she did a commercial for, I think I'm pronouncing the herring right, Vita Herring, V-I-T-A Herring. And
okay, yep.
She was doing an imitation of Katharine Hepburn. You'd swear it was Katharine Hepburn doing the commercial. Well, lo and behold, the advertising agency, they were sued because Katharine Hepburn said, you cannot use my persona to sell something. And they
no
had to
one
take
said it. She was easy to work with.
The what?
No one said Katharine Hepburn was easy to work with.
Well, you know, but when somebody takes your trying to use your persona to sell a product, that's not right.
No.
And yep. So that's when they changed the rules about you cannot imitate somebody
mm-hmm.
unless you have written permission, unless there's a fee. I know that Mae West always got a fee for anybody that wanted to do an imitation of her. And the same mm-hmm. thing with Tammy Grimes. Jerry and Raphael used to do an imitation of Tammy Grimes for commercials. And one time I was talking to Harry Abrams, an agent, and he said, would you audition Tammy Grimes? And I said, of course. And Tammy Grimes is a wonderful actress. And she came in and she auditioned and she said, Flo, thank you so much for asking for me and not that awful woman who does imitations of me. You know? So it's a crazy business. Even though people are stars in the business, they're nervous. They are very, very nervous. They don't care who's auditioning them. Fred Gwynne, you know who I mean, from the Munsters and everything, he came in to audition for a commercial, and the guy was very nervous. He said, I've never done this before, you know, and I said, well, don't worry about it. We're going to have some fun, and you do it and stuff like that. And people have to realize that actors are people. And
yes,
they
are.
Get just as nervous as anybody else. And sometimes when they're a little bit short with people or something like that, it's the nerves that are speaking. you know, and it's a wonderful, anyway, being a casting director was really, great fun. I really loved it. But, and your wife was doing shows in clubs in New York too, because I was there sitting in the audience.
Well, that's
and she was
good.
Wonderful.
Well, she thanks you. Thank you. Yes. She's a very talented woman.
Oh yeah. And then she's now a professional photographer. Am I right?
Well, she is. She's in several shows, and she's won awards, and so yes, she's pursuing her photography mostly.
Oh well, but
it's possible that she might be singing backup in a show that's possibly going to happen in the next few months.
Oh, uh-huh, so, good. That's good. Yeah, so, that's terrific. Yeah, I just don't like sitting around not doing anything. And I want to get involved. I mean, there are a lot of things coming up at the theater that I hope I can get involved with, you know. I don't have to be on stage. I'm talking about doing something anyway, even if it's sitting around queuing actors or whatever. But it's just so important to keep your hand in and keep, doing things, because that's what keeps me alive. I'll tell you that. If I had nothing to do, I would have given up the ghost a long time ago.
Well, I would cast you. I would cast you in a cabaret for your 97th birthday.
Well, you know, we were talking about that, Jay, and let's sit down and talk about it. And let's actually not for my 97th birthday, because April is too close. And I don't, with my memory and stuff like that, I really would have to have, a much more longer time to rehearse and whatnot. But we should sit down and talk about shows and some ideas to put together. And I do have an idea of one song I would like to do, but I would need the help of a wonderful engineer called Carmen to do it. But it might be kind of fun to do. And if I can still put one foot in front of the other and not fall off the stage, then we'll do another
show. Oh, you've fallen off the stage before, Flo.
The what?
You've fallen off that stage before.
Oh, yes, I did. It was there was some sort of an event, and I had volunteered to help out, and there were tables on the stage with food on it, and some of the other women and I were going back and forth clearing off the tables, and somebody moved a chair and they didn't tell me, and I went flying off the stage.
Yep. and how tall is that stage? That's about six inches high, right?
And I came down flat on my face. I wound up with a brain bleed. I was up in Albany. My whole face was so swollen. It was just awful. And poor John and them, it was a good thing they had insurance, because it cost them, their insurance company, a fortune. And I said, guys, I wish I could pay for all of this myself. But, but anyway, so I'm always very careful about that little
putting one foot after the other.
Putting one foot after the other, that's what it's all about, But anyway, so I think you and Carmen are going to be working on something together soon, are you not?
I don't know.
Carmen is just saying, yeah, well, let's do something, right?
We should do something.
Absolutely. I think you should. And I think
Carmen is a joy to work with, and he has a lovely wife, which is the great
attribute. And Allison is so talented. I love directing you and Allison and Souvenir.
Well, I wouldn't say we were easy.
No, you.
Nor would we say you were easy, but we managed to do it.
I was very hard on both of you, but it turned out that the audiences loved the show. And you were all really so, wonderful in it. But as a matter of fact, that might be a bad idea to do a revival of that show, if we could get Allison and you to do it, because it's a good show. And
we could do that for my 97th birthday.
For your 97th birthday? Okay. Oh, God, when people talk about age and stuff like that, I think to myself, I can't believe that I made it to this age, But anyway, Jay, we're coming up on our closing minute, and I just want to thank you so much for taking the time, and also for just the wonderful things you've done for me in the past to help me along my way.
Well, thank you, Flo. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we'll continue doing that.
And I thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing both you and Lynn soon, I hope.
Yep, I think that can be arranged.
Okay, terrific. And you take good care of yourself, okay?
Bye to you, and bye to Carmen. Bye, everybody.
And he's saying goodbye to you, too, Carmen.
Yep.
And so that's great. And please, just remember WGXC 90.7.